Good morning from Omaha, Nebraska. This is Brian Madden, and you're listening to your nightmare is what's happening.
I'm living here. You're just visiting.
So from Gabe's office in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian Madden. I'm sitting here looking at Gabe Knuth.
It's kind of beautiful here, actually, right now. This is the 1 week a year where our weather is just like San Francisco.
It is beautiful. I didn't step over any feces walking out the door, so it's not entirely like San Francisco.
Not the weather, actually. Okay. Not the environment. There's a cornfield in my front yard.
Yeah, actually, this is no joke. Like, looking out the window, you literally see cornfield and silos and high tension power lines. Yeah. Like, literally out the window.
Shipping power to Denver or Chicago or some other bigger city.
And then we've got Jack on the line from San Francisco. Hello, Jack.
Good morning.
Lucky.
So, okay, someone made noise and beeped. Who was that? Everybody mute. So today's podcast, it's just the three of us, and it's probably been a little while, I think, since we had a podcast, and there's a lot going down. Dell buys VMware, essentially. BlackBerry Android phone. What? Azure DAS. How about Microsoft talking about allowing Windows 10 in the cloud? How about the real Active Directory in the cloud also, Jack? You were talking about that before. So these are what we want to talk about. And, of course, any topics that you want to talk about. When we talk about Citrix, what happens to them now with Dell, all that kind of stuff. So where do you guys want to start today?
I think we just need to start with Dell and VMware.
Okay.
We'll see. We can't just fill up the whole hour with that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been a week, right, since this news came out, and I was on a call yesterday talking about it, and I think it's the Dell sort of VMware thing. You know, obviously this deal really is about Dell and EMC, and that's not our space, so we're not talking about that. But I just want to focus on the VMware part. I gotta say, I don't see this affecting VMware too much. Not at least, it's certainly not a negative. You know, everyone talks, oh, they're going to be owned by Dell now, they're owned by Harvard. Well, you know, they've always been. Except before, you know, 20% of VMware was public, 80% was owned by EMC. Now they're going to sell an additional 53% of VMware to the public via this tracking stock. So now, you know, EMC owned 80% of VMware, and they were fine. And Dell's going to own 25% of VMware, 27% of VMware, something like that. They'll still be fine.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, so EMC owns a lot more of VMware, and they still let VMware be off on their own. And VMware, you know, they're going to be beyond arm's length, I think, you know, running sort of, you know, they'll be under the umbrella of Dell, but they're not going to be influenced by them too much. And Dell has less influence than EMC would anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it affects VWorkspace. Or I'm sorry, I don't think it affects VMware in any real way.
Because you can argue these tracking stocks don't have votes, don't have voting rights. So the voting rights are 27% of the stock from Dell, 20% of the existing shares. But Dell, you know, 53% is still owned by the public without voting rights, in addition to the other 20% with voting rights. Like, Dell's not going to break that.
Yeah, and these people, that doesn't mean they're in on, like, the product development meetings.
So, it means they can get Elliot'd. They Elliot-proof themselves by not giving these shares voting rights.
Yeah.
But, you know, so the real interesting thing about this deal, you know, VWorkspace is toast in my mind. But there's probably some IP in there that Dell can do something with.
But say even they want to do that, I mean, the relationship being so far away, like, how, like, what do you think the process is of, like, hey, we want to use some IP, you know, like, because of the ownership relationship being, you know, so distant. It's not like it's a merger of two, like, you know, software shops.
Yeah. And it's so far away also time-wise. We should point out that this deal is not complete. And it's not approved even.
Right. The date. So we heard middle of last year, and then somebody said, "I can give you a little bit better time frame. It's somewhere between March and October of next year."
Oh, thank you for that clarification.
Yeah. Let's just say June, okay?
But Gabe pointed out most of the features that vWorkspace had were enhancing the Microsoft stack, enhancing Hyper-V-based solutions, enhancing, you know, remote effects and that kind of stuff. And so now Microsoft sees that going to a competitor. We'll talk about Microsoft's in a minute. The other major aspect of this, I think, is on the mobility standpoint, from the enterprise mobility standpoint, where VMware, of course, owns AirWatch. And Dell, Jack, you correct me. I'm not aware. I think I recall an article from you that, like, all the companies that merged up together, you know, Dell had an EMM solution, Quest had something, Wyze had something. They're kind of now all together, and Dell merged all of them together. But I'm not aware of that. I couldn't tell what that product was called. I imagine AirWatch is, you know, is one of the market leaders. That any, it's like vWorkspace. Any IP that, that Dell had throughout all three of those companies, they just call up, you know, NOAA and be like, "Hey, do you want any of this stuff before we throw it out?"
Yeah, but well, so, but that's a good question. I mean, do you want me to go into what they have?
Yeah, what Dell has?
Yeah, so yeah. So between the Wyze acquisition and the Quest acquisition and the Case acquisition and the Credent acquisition, you know, they have a wide variety of stuff. And when they, it was, oh, almost 2 years ago when they put it all together as sort of a Dell EMM suite, and the, like, the main mobile device management part came out of Quest Cloud Client Connect or Cloud Client Manager, you know, which was sort of their cloud thin client management product that they also folded MDM into that. And I was reading my old articles, like, the, you know, it used to be called Project Stratus, and thinking, like, wow, I was, like, marveling at how there were old names that I used to talk about, like, thinking, huh, I guess I've been doing this for a little while at least.
Like, there's stuff you forgot about. Like, you go, have you Googled something to research because you didn't know about some topic and you Googled it and your article came up that you wrote, and part one and part two and the article had all the information that you didn't know that you were looking for?
It was pretty close to that. But anyway, so remember the other thing that Dell was also doing, so for their whole, you know, their mobility and end user thing. So they had, like, the Case appliance for PC management. They had essentially the MDM and thin client management that essentially came from Quest. They had some containerized email apps that they built on their own. They had, remember they were OEMing Mocha 5. So that was kind of another question of what would happen to that. But it's been,
Mocha 5 answered that, I think.
were they OEMing the EMM stuff that Mocha 5 was doing? I thought it was just the layering stuff.
It was the client VM management stuff.
Okay.
But obviously, so the cloud client manager to manage the Wyze thin clients has to stick around, because obviously you have to manage those. So, like, a few different possibilities came in. I mean, one thought was, like, would AirWatch really be interested in the traditional PC management stuff? Because, you know, they could get their hands on more traditional PC management, and, you know, they've always wanted to manage every single endpoint out there, as well as the thin client management stuff. And so, you know, if VMware really wants to be able to, like, touch every single endpoint, like, hey, that's another way to do it.
But although,
on the other hand, they're so interested in the Windows 10 with MDM strategy going forwards, and it's going to be another year until they can actually do anything with this stuff. And again, like, the relationship is, like, I just can't imagine how, I mean, it's not like they're going to be integrating products together or anything.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, too, is, you know, I think you really hit the nail on the head with the statement about the Windows 10 EMM management. You know, at VMworld this past year, in Sean's session, I mean, that's what really opened my eyes to how much you could do with Windows 10 via the, you know, quote unquote EMM management sort of techniques versus the kind of traditional computer management. And if this deal's another year and then another couple years to you know, integrate products and that kind of stuff, I mean, Windows 7 expires in 4 years. I don't think you touch Windows 7. You just focus on the EMM-based management for those you know, Windows 10 devices, and you can do it for Mac also. And then, of course, the cloud client management for managing thin clients, that makes sense, kind of roll that together. I would imagine that AirWatch, like, that's a good point, but I would imagine rolling that together with AirWatch. And I mean, it's like your Dell-wise thin clients are managed by AirWatch, and like you get your AirWatch-wise management license for every thin client you buy.
Doesn't that seem a little bit of a stretch, especially if they're going to operate VMware in the same way VMware operates from EMC today? I mean, would they really combine products across two companies?
Well, it wouldn't really be a combining products thing, because remember, so for AirWatch, like it depends on how the management APIs for the Wyze thin clients work, and I really know nothing about thin client management. But sort of like taking whatever management APIs are consumable from a mobile device and plugging them into the AirWatch platform is what they do, like an assembly line, because, you know, there's updates with iOS every year, plus minor updates that come throughout the middle of the year, and all the different types of Android. And, you know, you look at the different manufacturers' customizations of Android that AirWatch supports, and there's a list of like 20 of them. And as well, they've done support for other older Windows devices, and so I feel like plugging like what they need is just like the documentation for how you manage the Wyze thin clients, and you know there's no integrating, you know, Wyze Cloud Client Manager in there. There's like, hey, just give us the documentation for all the APIs or whatever we need, and we'll just like, you know, make that one more device that our platform can plug
like
into.
Some junior engineer from Wyze is moving from San Jose to Atlanta.
Yeah,
and they're still employed by Wyze, but they're contractor, quote, you know, to AirWatch, and they're going to AirWatch every day, and they're just kind of their beachhead there, and making sure that everything that, you know, the two companies are doing, so that those thin clients can be managed by AirWatch. And I guess, as you say, then it's just another device platform that AirWatch manages.
You know, presumably, and you know, this will be a good question for them, you know, next time I talk to them, is how exactly the onboarding new device types works. But if you look at their track record, so I don't know what the process is really like. But if you look at their track record, their background is just like adding, you know, everything. Like if Samsung, like for example, if Samsung like really was behind Tizen phones or something like that, which, you know, if you're not familiar, you're probably asking me, what's Tizen? Tizen is like an alternate operating system to Android that people for years have been saying that Samsung is going to, you know, go after it so that they can be not controlled so much by Google, except that has never really happened. But say that did happen, you know that AirWatch would be on top of that, or like Firefox phone or Ubuntu phone or whatever.
So
I just want to be careful. I think that a lot of times our brains are taking this into, you know, like as if Dell just bought VMware outright and was folding it into the Dell ecosystem, because that's the typical acquisition that we've seen over the years. And it's just not that way. So I was writing the vWorkspaces future article last week, my mind kept going in that direction, and it's hard to pull out of that, but we just don't know what's going to happen when the two companies actually operate separately. We could see for 2 or 3 years completely set, you know, we could still see vWorkspace, we could still see the Dell Cloud Client Manager, cloud, you know, the whole EMM stack, that, all that stuff could still exist in the meantime, just because they haven't gotten to it yet, because they haven't figured out how to handle these things. Because it's not like I said, it's not like VMware is just now Dell, and now it's just one more thing that they have to settle out and they have to make a decision on it. These are two separate companies with two separate products that, you know, they may or may not really compete against each other because they're going after different customers.
And I think the big question, you know, it all just comes down to also about how sales will work. You know, will the Dell reseller or will the sales force around Dell be able to, will they be selling EMC and VMware products? Because one of the other points that was mentioned like, hey, while you're selling, you know, all these Dell laptops and Ultrabooks to organizations, hey, why not sell some AirWatch to manage them too?
And that could be there as, I mean, that could exist as like a as a partnership. That could exist today.
Well, it does exist because Dell sales reps get paid on Unidesk. Like their Dell quota accounts if they sell Unidesk. And so it could be as easy as, yeah, you just add that. Hey, if you sell a VMware AirWatch license, that counts towards your quota.
Yeah.
And as Kevin Goodman says, sales reps are coin operated. You add it to the list of what can retire their quota, and all of a sudden you're selling a lot of whatever you add to that list.
Yeah. So the challenge now comes when Dell gets, you know, when the sales reps get compensated by selling AirWatch or selling vWorkspace, when Dell software has their own stuff as well. So do the sales reps make more money on the commission from selling the VMware product, or do they make enough money selling the Dell product? And do they know enough about both of them to sell the appropriate ones to the right people? That's what happened with Citrix and VDI in a box. Citrix acquired that. Sales reps didn't know how to sell it. They targeted it 5,000 user per rollouts, or depending upon where you were in the world, sub 1,000. Sometimes they were even 500 or 100 user deployments the sales reps thought they were targeting it at. And basically just nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew how to pitch it against Zen Desktop, and so nobody sold it.
Do we know which one is cheaper?
Well, VDI in a box doesn't exist anymore. So.
Well, I guess for vWorkspace versus Vue, and for
vWorkspace, hands down.
Yeah. So I'm putting the comments. Brian's been predicting the end of vWorkspace for years now. I don't know if I have. I like vWorkspace, but they already got one.
And that's what I was saying too. You know, at the very end of that article, I said, you know, personally, I hope to see vWorkspace around post merger, but I keep thinking the same things I thought when Quest acquired Provision Networks. And when Dell acquired Quest, and if you think about it, just vWorkspace's existence has been strained ever since Dell bought Quest. You know, we always wondered what happened. They went dark, just completely dark, for about a year after that. And so they come out, they started to swing a little bit, but I mean, can it endure this? I mean, this is a bigger deal than any of the other stuff.
Well, when you talk to the vWorkspace people at Dell. Like, you know, we did demos and videos with them. And like, guys, this product is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Why are you not just beating the drums and hitting it? And, you know, it's $100 and it's amazing. And the answer is some form of, well, you know, Dell's partner with Citrix, Dell's a partner with VMware. So we'll sort of be here. And if customers come to us, we'll sell it to them, but we can't really go out and market against the VMware or Citrix products.
But this is where I wonder exactly how the dynamics of this acquisition and how they differ from other ones where Dell might just buy VMware. I wonder if there's anything here that can keep vWorkspace around, just because they're, you know, Dell vWorkspace right now is being targeted at users that, you know, want that super simple installation and management experience.
I mean, if you're installing a small, because vWorkspace,
you've seen them both though. What? Which one's better?
If you're targeting VDI at a small environment, is what vWorkspace is. I think Vue is just as easy to stand up
and continue managing.
Yeah.
How big is the market for VDI in small environments anyway?
Well, that's a good question. to me, you go DAS. Which we'll get to that. By the way, there's another question in the forum. Do you think that the pretty massive debt taken on in order to finance this deal will affect VMware across the board? Cost cutting seems likely. And that
VMware doesn't need an Elliott anymore. They have a Dell now.
Best podcast joke ever.
There's the tweet of the day. Yeah, I don't know. I like that. I'm not sure how that works on that side of things. I don't know what EMC's debt situation was, if they had any, and how that plays down. Yeah, it could be a thing, but I can't see. I mean, the thing is, VMware, I feel like, has been doing everything right, both from the financial standpoint, from the management, from the R&D. You know, I think if I'm Dell, I don't touch them. And I just kind of say, because the thing is, like, you know, they'll take the profits from VMware to help pay down their debt. Of course, they're only going to get, you know, 27% of their profits, because that's all they're going to own after this. I don't know. That's not my.
That was the other question I had, was that does Dell make more money on their 27% cut of Horizon or of AirWatch than they do on their own products? And if they do, see ya.
Get rid of their own products, you mean?
Yeah. I
mean, yeah.
Why dedicate sales to your products if you're making more selling somebody else's products?
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit, because the other question.
So, it was just funny thinking, like, how different would this conversation have been today if Dell had bought Citrix? I know that was just vague rumors. But I guess we'd assume that would probably be more of a like direct acquisition type thing, and then we'd be having all these conversations about like how. Then we'd be having like actual real integration conversations.
I think that conversation went Citrix asking Dell, "Hey, do you want to buy us?" And then Dell said, "You know what? We got a few irons in the fire right now. We'll call you back if something falls through."
Hey, there's still like a month and a half for that to happen.
That's true.
Well, and that's kind of where I wanted to go, because someone in the comments, you know, talked about vWorkspace having support for Hyper-V. Could we see Horizon, you know, adding support for Hyper-V, kind of with those technologies? That seems less likely to me. You know, where I'm looking at this, and I want to bring Citrix and Microsoft into the conversation, because, first of all, as I wrote last week, Citrix is not going to be an independent company too much longer. Whether they go private or not, someone will own them. And one of the commenters posted a comment that I thought was fantastic, which, in fact, I'm going to base my article on for tomorrow, about, which is that, you know, Citrix, maybe it's finally time for Microsoft to pull the trigger. And that way the Zen app, Zen desktop, that goes into, you know, Citrix Workspace Cloud goes into Azure. The stuff is sort of built into Windows or an extension of Windows. They can even use, you know, the enterprise file sync share, the EMM. Like, all that stuff makes sense for Microsoft. And some of other Citrix's businesses, they're looking at spinning off. Like, for example, you know, GoTo can just be spun off. Maybe because of Microsoft service. Actually, GoTo, Microsoft could do great things with. NetScaler, you know, you sell that to Cisco. And that becomes an interesting play for Microsoft. And the reason I mention that is I have a sense that, you know, enterprises are falling into two camps. There's Hyper-V shops and there's VMware shops. There's vSphere shops. And VMware can make Horizon integrated with vSphere and the whole VMware platform, you know, in a more tight way than a third party like a Zen app or Zen desktop can be. And so if Microsoft gets Zen app, Zen desktop, I could see that really focusing on Hyper-V, so that both of these are the logical extension of their respective companies' virtualization platforms, of their infrastructure platforms. So if you are a vSphere shop, Horizon is your extension of that infrastructure to deliver Windows applications and web apps and all that kind of stuff from that infrastructure. If you're a Microsoft shop with Hyper-V or Azure, then what, you know, was Citrix Zen Desktop Zen App becomes the extension of that. And so I think that we've talked for years, you know, will Microsoft ever buy Citrix? And we kind of always said Microsoft will buy Citrix when they have to. They haven't had to yet. I think they do now. And the reason for that is because VMware is you know, has so much momentum behind them. I do not believe that this thing will be bad for them. I think if anything, it's good for them. And VMware will have this tight integration of their entire infrastructure platform, whether it's on-prem or cloud. And this is, you know, Horizon's the last mile delivery of that. Microsoft is going to have to compete with that. And I think Microsoft can't rely on their competition for the end-to-end platform being these yokels from Florida who can't get their act together. I think at this time, especially Citrix is probably cheaper today than it was 5 years ago. I think at this time, Microsoft pulls the trigger and says, we can't leave this to, you know, a third party anymore. We have to own this entire stack. to really compete against the Dell VMware stack.
But what then, would it take? Like what does Citrix cost?
So that's on the, you know, purely on the Zen desktop and Zen app side, but there's like a whole lot of other stuff. I don't think Microsoft would like want Zen Mobile, for instance, because, you know, Microsoft's whole deal is that they've built Intune, you know, from the ground up. And so, you know, they certainly want it be like, hey, maybe there's some IP that they could cherry pick and choose. But like ultimately, like say they're the path that would really be best for them is, you know, eventually get everybody on Intune instead of Zen Mobile. And then what about, you know, like integrating the whole workspace, the whole workspace cloud story? Because, you know, again, there's...
Microsoft's been buying software companies for 30 years. So these are true issues, but these are not unsurmountable. Citrix's market cap is $12 billion. So you figure, you know, a bit of a premium there, say $13 billion, but they sell off GoTo, or maybe they keep it. They, you know, what's NetScaler worth? Probably a couple billion. So, you know, maybe this works out to be like a $10 billion deal for Microsoft.
And that's a pittance.
That's a pittance. Now, you know, whether they invest $10 billion in... this, no, I guess they'd have to. I would say whether they invest $10 billion in this legacy Windows delivery platform, but that's
Dell just did.
Well, yeah, and Microsoft, that's like what they are.
Yeah, I mean they're moving towards the cloud, but then you know we've got you know Workspace Cloud. Microsoft has their own Azure. You know, it looks like they're working towards their own DAS and Azure thing that we'll talk about in a bit. So you know they may want to get away from that traditional desktop, you know, legacy world, but they created it and they got to own it for, you know, the foreseeable future. So I don't think that would turn them off of it.
Microsoft appears, if I'm reading this correctly, to have about $100 billion in cash also.
Oh, so we'll just write a check.
So, but, you know, to me, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, everything we saw from VMware and VMworld was about the end-to-end platform from data center and cloud infrastructure all the way through application delivery, through end-user device management, application management, and that's what they're building. And Microsoft is building that same thing, but like I said, the Microsoft story, a big, big part of that story today involves Citrix. And I think at this point, you know, with Citrix's recent stumbles and the uncertainty, and I mean, gosh, you could not imagine if Microsoft let Citrix go to HP. I mean, ugh. And from Microsoft, you know, not that HP doesn't have their own issues right now, but what is, you know, Microsoft just can't fool around. It's you know, Citrix was a strong partner, and it was a different world, and it was all good. But now with what VMware's doing, I think Microsoft they just can't wait.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Yeah, and I mean, going to HP or Cisco or something. I want the Microsoft thing to happen. I don't want to write that Citrix finally buys or Cisco finally buys Citrix article.
So okay,
so let's tomorrow move on. Tomorrow's article, Microsoft should buy Citrix.
Yeah, essentially. Why the time is right now. And the other thing too, and this kind of ties into it. I don't recall did I write an article about this or was it so Mary Jo Foley at ZDNet, did a piece on a new FAQ, an Azure licensing FAQ, where Microsoft announced that they would allow or they will soon allow customers to run Windows desktops on Azure. It's going to be a BYOL, so the customers have to have their own license. It's probably going to be only the enterprise version of the license, and you're going to have to be current with the subscription and all this kind of stuff. And it's not using – you're not sort of buying or renting the license. This is not SPLA for Windows desktop. This is if you own, you know – with quotes around the extent you can only license it. If you have the rights to run Windows 10 desktops, then you will be allowed to run those desktops as a VM in a cloud provider, which is a very interesting announcement because you read that and you're like, wait, what? What? Why is that a thing?
Well, and right. You couldn't do that before?
Yeah.
And B, I guess that answers the question of does Microsoft have to play by their own rules?
Right. But
that's so, the same stipulation that every other cloud provider
right,
has.
Right. But it's we should be clear. You are not allowed to do that today. They very much say this is if you take your own Windows 10 license and just stand up a VM in AWS and just connect to it remotely and use it, you are breaking the Windows license agreements.
In Azure.
In any cloud provider. You're breaking the license agreements.
So it's a Windows 10 specific thing.
It's a Windows desktop specific thing. The Windows desktop OS. So Windows 10, Windows 7, Windows 8. You are not allowed to run your own licenses in a cloud provider. And the only exception for that is you are allowed to use it for testing purposes and like software integration purposes. So if you are a software developer and need to have a whole bunch of different versions of Windows clients to test your software or whatever.
How's that different from what DAS providers are already doing? Are you saying that DAS providers aren't?
No, there's all those arcane rules about you have to be on separated hardware and...
Okay, so you're just saying I can't stand up a VM, not a Well, no, but there's no difference. That's still a VM. But right. I can't do AWS specifically, like part of the...
Or anything, yeah. Yeah. Any cloud, yeah. You cannot go to a cloud provider today, go to AWS, okay. And just click boot up a VM. I want one V processor and 2 gigs RAM, right. And it's blank. I point it to my disk image and install Windows 10 on there. If you connect that with a production user, you're breaking the license agreement. Yeah, and there have been cases where they've gone after people doing that because people said, oh, well, we'll just roll... It's like rolling our own DAS. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes
you're
sense.
Not allowed okay. to do that. And so Microsoft said there will be a new, quote, benefit of Windows 10 Enterprise, which will allow you to do this, which is interesting because, again, it's weird that they have to call that a benefit. That's like saying, well, we're going to sell this new car, and a benefit is we'll let you drive it at night. and in the FAQ, they said they will have some kind of program to allow this to happen with other cloud providers too. So it will not be an Azure-specific thing. But so this is not Microsoft fixing Splunk, and this is not them going whole hog into DAS and that kind of thing. But it's opening the door a crack.
I think it's cracking it more. I mean, yeah, because they added the per user VDA license last year, before Windows 10 even was announced. Back when we thought it was Windows 9 still. So there's a per user license now for it, and now you're able to. Now this changed, so you're able to actually install that in the cloud. Why are they inching? Why aren't they just doing it?
Again, because they'll inch along because they're making a lot of money in this traditional model of not doing it, and they will just go there as slowly as they possibly can. It's like when a kid...
DAS adoption is so slow already. Why are they slowing it down even more?
Well, remember, the best thing for Microsoft is a world where DAS doesn't exist.
Sure.
And so it's like taking your kid to the bathroom to take a shower, a bath, and they turn into like the limp noodle. It's kind of collapse into like the rag doll on the ground. You have to like drag them like by the arm up the stairs. Like that's Microsoft going to the...
You're not even a parent. And that's a great analogy.
My dog used to do that. Where, you know, like I knew when I was coming to bed and the dog was in my spot and I swear that she knew that I was there and like was pretending to be asleep and I'd grab her and I swear I saw one eye half open and make eye contact with me and then quickly close. And then I pick her up. It's a 40-pound dog and I swear that I've got her rib cage in the hallway and her like head and feet are still on the bed somehow. So I think, you know, again, as Microsoft ever so slowly inches towards this, you know, I mean, it is inevitable that we are going in this direction, whether it happens next month or in 10 years, it's happening. And especially as we talk about, you know, how Windows will exist, especially long-term to support these Windows Enterprise applications. And it's kind of funny, we talked to a company over the weekend whose, you know, primary purchasing and sort of vendor management software was a Fox Pro application. The person who wrote about it is long dead. And so it's like, yeah, this is the real world, you know?
I want to know what developers must live some sort of rough lifestyle that they all die.
Well, with this, I mean, this is a 30-year-old platform.
Yeah, how many people, I mean, you know, some people from the 90s are dead now.
Assume he was a 20-year veteran when he started.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't hire a junior kid to write your main purchasing application in 1992. So, but you know, this to me, you know, Microsoft is, we're going there, albeit slowly. Microsoft is going there. The door's cracking open ever so slowly. But again, you tie back Citrix to this. VMware is going to use this Dell acquisition to, you know, sort of as a I don't know, they'll use it as a thing to strengthen them. And everyone can talk about, oh, all the turmoil and all the unknowns for years. And I mean, this is VMware. Customers are not fleeing VMware because Dell owns them. Because again, they've been owned by an old school hardware storage company for 13 years now. You know, this is not, you know, this is business as usual at VMware. They said everything right at VMworld. Microsoft is not going to just let them have that. I think Microsoft, you know, this is VMware's competition. You talk to them also. VMware's not worried about Citrix. VMware's worried about Microsoft.
Oh yeah, that guy they brought out on stage at VMworld, he was a Windows 10 guy, not Microsoft corporate, Microsoft proper. Microsoft and VMware, you know, collaborating only on Windows 10 in no other way. In
yeah,
any other way, they're complete enemies.
I talked about how like they hugged each other, but it was a very product specific hug. It was not a Microsoft and VMware are friends now.
Yeah, it was only like one tap on the back.
All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about. I want to talk about this BlackBerry Android phone. I know very little about this.
Well, so it's actually been probably 3 or 4 weeks since the announcement came out. But yeah, BlackBerry's making an Android phone. You know, so
does it have a keyboard?
What's that?
Does it have a keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
So of course, like there are a lot of people, you know, that are like gleefully waiting for BlackBerry to just go away, but they just keep on doing so many interesting things.
Well, how is BlackBerry releasing an Android phone interesting beyond? Well, I never saw that one coming.
Isn't BlackBerry? I mean, aren't there lots of Android phones in the world? And doesn't this mean BlackBerry is just like another Android phone maker? Like, who cares?
Well, so you know, interesting and like the path towards their successful future are maybe separate things. But no, I'm thinking. Also, we haven't talked since BlackBerry acquired Good Technology.
All right.
And because if you think about Good Technology's approach to mobility, it's a very specific approach that they've always been, you know, very specifically concentrated on, which is the approach of, you know, no matter the platform, this is going back, of course, way pre-iOS and Android days, no matter the platform, we make a secure client app. We connect it to our network operations center so that we can do all the, you know, fancy networking stuff and have all the security that goes along with it. And then there you go. So, like, if you, of course, like for years, if you wanted that at the device level, you got a BlackBerry device because, you know, the BlackBerry device is connected to the BlackBerry NOC too. So it's basically consolidating like all the companies that care about having, you know, that type of approach to mobility. And that's like a lot of like it's, you know, any banker you talk to, what are they using for mobile email? They're using you know, like a couple of years ago, they were using a BlackBerry or Good, and now they're pretty much they're using Good.
So Good is sort of like a software BlackBerry.
Yeah, yeah. And
so it made sense. Like in your mind, if BlackBerry is going to buy anyone, Good makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, BlackBerry had been working on their BlackBerry had essentially the same approach, you know, with their Bez 10 or Bez 12 now, since they had been making BlackBerry had been making similar containerized mobile email apps for 2 or 3 at least 3 years now, and sort of the same approach. You know, they take they take their the app, and so instead of connecting like the BlackBerry device to their Knock, the app is connected to the Knock instead. And you know, this is a good thing for good because obviously they were looking for some place to go. You know, they were going to attempt to IPO but didn't, and this gets a whole lot of customers for BlackBerry as well. So you know, some people would characterize it as like two stodgy companies propping each other up. But hey, between them they have a lot of customers that prefer that approach, and you know, I think it'll probably be that way for the time being at least. And so hey, good for them.
So I'm saying this from an ignorant position, but it seems like you can see how an Android device could fit in, because that would give them all the compatibility with the Android application ecosystem, and they get sort of the benefits of a BlackBerry via the good technology sort of client that could be on that Android device.
Yeah, or because it's a BlackBerry Android device, they have all the device level modifications and integrations so that like the whole device itself is connected into the BlackBerry infrastructure. So it's like a BlackBerry that happens to be using Android instead of BlackBerry.
Right. So you could have, because I guess they would, right. So they can sort of enhance Android if they need to, or to make it so it just hooks in a more tightly controlled way.
Yeah, yeah. But the problem with that is that the you know, the Android market is tough, and the enterprise Android market is tough as well. You know, we have Samsung Knox, which you know, Samsung Knox is starting to get, it has all of its certifications, and you know, we hear about it rolling into government agencies and government projects, and a lot of companies. You know, there's a certain group of companies that if they have an Android strategy, it's hey, we support you know, we support Knox. And as well as Android for Work is rolling out.
And is Android for Work what was Samsung Safe, and then they released all that into the Android open source?
So that's not exactly clear, because there were, you know, so this was like over a year ago that there was an announcement like, hey, Android for Work, it's based on Samsung Knox, but then Google later said that that wasn't the case. So it's really rather unclear exactly, you know, what bits came from where.
But the concept, but Android for Work is a thing that's just built into Android now, right?
Yeah. Well, so
built into AOSP, or is it built into the I can't remember the other acronym I want to use right now. You know what I'm asking?
Google Mobile Services.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's something. So. So not a, it's not something that's, you know, required for a phone to be, you know, to be Google certified. So it's slow to roll out. You know, it does have some dependencies, as the phone has to be powerful enough to be able to support it. So that is definitely an issue right now, is that the hardware compatibility list is short, and it's limited to very high end phones. You know, which I talked to some people, and like their issue is like, hey, if we want to do a bunch of mass deployed phones, you know, and want them to be cheap, well, most of the Android for Work phones so far are all the expensive ones.
Which I guess, I mean, yeah, so I guess it depends on who your target is.
Yeah, yeah, because there's obviously, you know, there's the like the office worker BYOD types that, you know, they're all going to be getting high end phones anyway. But think of all the, I'm thinking extended enterprise use cases. Think of like all the phones that Uber gives to drivers and things like that.
But those are all probably high end phones anyway, aren't they?
They're mostly iPhones. and other phones. But imagine if they could be like $200 Android phones instead of iPhones.
Okay, right.
So think of all the different use cases for that. So bottom line with the Android in the enterprise market, you have Android for work. It's still slow in rolling out, but it's on its way. And you know, we'll revisit this conversation a year from now. And we knew that this would happen with Android for work, that it would take time because, hey, we're still talking about Android.
It's herding cats.
Yeah. And at the higher end for more regulated industries, you have Samsung Knox gaining a foothold and gaining approval. And so like, where does BlackBerry's phone fit in that?
And I was going to say, is it going to leverage Android for work? Do we even know? Or is it going to be, you know, pulling on their own experience?
Or does it not need to because of good? Or
right.
Or they're doing, who knows, whatever Android customizations in there. But the thing is, you know, it said that the BlackBerry name is kind of a, like, making this BlackBerry Priv your strategy, whereas you know, John,
what's the Priv?
The Priv is the name of the new Android phone.
Okay.
Whereas you know, over the last year at least, John Chen, the BlackBerry CEO, has said, you know, like specifically, like, hey, we'll be making phones if it makes sense for us. So, like, do you, if you know, the Priv could not be around a year from now because, you know, if they decide that they're not making any money off of it, do you want to base your strategy on that?
Right.
And as well, like, hey, we have VMI now for you know, these super secure top end use cases. Yet another option. And hey, that the whole exciting part about that is that you care even less about the phone hardware.
Do you see BlackBerry buying a VMI company?
Because now for coming up soon.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if they say they keep the phone, but really say they get rid of the phone, BlackBerry still has to try to exist. What could they offer that's unique in that world? And because the people BlackBerry's trying to leverage those customers that like BlackBerry for their BlackBerry-ness, you know. And so they want that high security. They want all of that. And so you would think, you know, there might be some overlap there where they could use a VMI product.
Well, we're talking like, you know, for your typical like banks and stuff, you know, then hey, they'll use good, or they'll use BlackBerry Enterprise Service to manage Samsung or other Android for work phones. As a matter of fact, BlackBerry and Samsung already have. You know, they announced a partnership close to a year ago where essentially it's you can take the corporate container on a Samsung Knox phone and hook it directly into the BlackBerry infrastructure.
So them buying a VMI company, it's just like a feature of the good client where it's just like, you know, because you can wrap your apps and have the secure containers or whatever they're calling it on the device with sort of local applications. And then this is just a way to access other, it's like the way Citrix Receiver works on iOS. It's got local apps and remote apps in it.
Right. Yeah. It's like if you work for the NSA and you need to access classified materials, then hey, pop open the VMI client. And then maybe the rest of your stuff is in good or is in, you know, Samsung's containerization or something like that. There are a lot of different ways that could work out. So bottom line is if BlackBerry doesn't have a handset, especially now that they have good, there's still a lot that they could do. And, you know, especially if they bought a VMI vendor while they were at it. I think this could be another, you know, another article coming up.
I think that's an interesting sort of acquisition, you know, potential. If we look at the app transformation or app, what are they called? Refactoring.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which one they like, but that's probably part of this too, right? I mean, maybe I don't know if BlackBerry buys one of those companies, but I could see wherever Citrix ends up buying one of those companies and VMware buying one of those companies, and that's sort of just part of this whole conversation also, is being able to deliver Windows applications down to these devices and transform them so that they're device appropriate.
Yeah, I feel like it's more of a natural fit for a desktop virtualization focused company, just because the technology that's on the back end that's refactoring the Windows applications is usually based on some sort of desktop virtualization. So,
yeah.
You know, if BlackBerry bought it, then they have to now start worrying about the rest of the desktop virtualization infrastructure as well. Hey, vWorkspace. but I do think that it's going to be Dell, Microsoft, Citrix. You know, those are the likely candidates to acquire an app refactoring platform.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the one other thing that BlackBerry mentioned was the idea of, hey, they could provide software solutions to other Android. The actual remarks that they made were not very specific, but the implication seemed to be is like the way that they have that device level. Or, you know, basically sub-app level. It's some sort of OS-level integration, with other OEMs. They could do that instead. So, like, hey, you take your whatever other phone, and maybe, hey, it can also connect at the OS level to the BlackBerry infrastructure. So then, like, essentially anything could be a BlackBerry?
I thought that's what they were going for now.
Or,
I get what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now they're going for like, hey, we have this Android phone that will have, it'll be BlackBerry infrastructure aware. Imagine if instead of making their own Android phone, they could just partner with other Android OEMs and say, hey, how about, also making your phones Android or BlackBerry infrastructure aware?
Yeah.
And then they could license the IP to make their keyboards to like accessory manufacturers or I bet there's space somewhere in there for somebody to have Foxconn make a couple million Android phones with all of the BlackBerry keyboard IP. You're telling me you can't sell a couple million of those a year?
Yeah. Their keyboards, I guess their keyboards are good enough. I don't know.
I mean, isn't that what everybody loves about them?
I wonder how true that is, or if that's just what they. Maybe this is you're joking, but I wonder if that's like I think they say that to sort of, it's like a marketing ploy to sort of put in our mind so that we are thinking, well, BlackBerry is kind of not maybe with it and current and hip in a lot of ways, but hey, they got those good keyboards. But I wonder how good their keyboards are. Like, how hard is it to make a keyboard? I don't know. I wonder how good their keyboards really are, or if that's just they've sort of implanted that memory.
What about that iPhone keyboard case thing that they got that they made them shut down? They should make one of those.
Wait, so BlackBerry shut down an iPhone keyboard case?
There was some celebrity attached to it and maybe a Kickstarter project, and it was just like, imagine an iPhone case with what looks like a BlackBerry keyboard on the bottom.
But they got it shut down?
Yeah.
Well, weird. I thought those existed, to be honest.
But, well, wait, was it a keyboard, just a generic keyboard, or was it a BlackBerry keyboard? I don't know. I don't know what the difference is there, but
the keys,
I mean, I've seen plenty of keyboard cases.
The keys looked, I mean, it must have been close enough to BlackBerry's keyboards that somebody...
you know what would be cool is there's so many BlackBerries that are like just filling up the recycle bins. It'd be cool if you could make something where you actually take the actual keyboard out of an old BlackBerry, because I'm sure the keyboard from like the BlackBerry Pearl or whatever is fine, the actual physical mechanical keyboard, and then you can build that into an iPhone case.
That's a good question, but with the, it's got to be like, I'd have to guess that they could, make them way thinner and smaller these days. Like, I wonder how much, the mechanism of the keyboard in an old bolt or something goes inside the body of the phone.
Do you want a keyboard on your phone?
Me?
The thought of having a keyboard on my phone again just seems archaic.
No, but I'm 30.
Let me ask you this. Sorry, this is a little bit of topic change. Microsoft announced a bunch of new phones, and I was on a call yesterday with Mary Jo Foley, and she was just raving about these new Microsoft phone devices. And I know nothing about these, but what's the story there?
All the new Lumia phones, they're all pretty interesting and pretty high end. And
so it's just basically the new line of the high end Nokia Windows 10 phones.
Yeah, and you know there are plenty of Windows phone users out there, and it's a great mobile phone operating system. I've always enjoyed my experiences using it. Since I haven't used it in a little while, I'm not sure, like, you know, when you do the test of like all the apps that I use on my iPhone, what percentage of them, because, you know, like for at the end of the day, having a lot of apps available is important, but it's really on a user by user basis, whether or not your favorite apps are there or not.
You know, it reminds me of, building the MAME cabinets. So MAME is that like arcade machine emulator software you can use to actually run old ROMs of like, you know, Pac-Man and Dig Dug and that kind of stuff. And Gabe and I built these things, you know, 10 years ago. And I'm at Gabe's house and I'm playing his a couple days ago and I haven't touched this thing in 5 years. And I was reminded, you know, it's got like 60,000 games in it. But really I care about like 10. I mean, I want... you know, Asteroids, Space Invaders, and the games it has on it. There's like a billion games in Japanese I never heard of, or all these like knockoffs. There's like
so many Mahjong games.
Yeah, and so it's funny because this is kind of the same way. Like I don't, yeah, you're right. I don't need the Microsoft Store to support
a
million apps. I need it to support the 10 I use. I guess therein lies the rub. Is the 10 apps that I use are the 8 apps that the rest of the planet uses, you know, because I've got Dropbox and Slack and Uber and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, but I've got my own 2 apps, my own have-to-have apps, like the Pinball Finder. And if there's no Pinball Finder on the Windows phone, then I don't want it if I am used to that on my other device.
Yeah, and you know, in the comments here, Sendrars is saying, you know, talking like, what about Microsoft as that sort of standard phone for the enterprise case? And again, you know, we're probably thinking like situations where the company is issuing somebody a phone, like
you know,
for example, like that. The phones that Uber gives out to some of their drivers or other similar situations.
I'm curious how many places that happens. Cause do you remember how we always joked about whenever anyone talks about SaaS apps, it's like, you have SaaS apps, you know, like sales.
Yeah.
And those are the go-to examples and no one can think of any other examples. And then you hear the same thing here. It's like, well, you know, when companies want to give their apps to their employees, like Uber, how many employees are actually doing that?
How many companies are actually doing that?
Yeah.
I'd say a lot. Okay, this is an interesting question. So this is, you're asking like, what does the extended enterprise of phones and devices look like? I mean, think about all the like tablets in stores, all the phones and tablets on airplanes, phones and tablets and stuff in hospitals and all that. And think of all those different examples. And, you know, that's like I can't think of any numbers right to put in front of.
Yeah, I guess you can think about also, you know, there's examples of insurance adjusters who are carrying tablets. And yeah, I guess it's a thing.
Yeah, I was in LensCrafters on someday. And, you know, guess what? Like, the sales rep iPad, yeah, like, took a picture of the glasses that I wanted and, you know, sent me the email and everything. And
that's cool.
So all those could, you know, very they could very well be, you know, be Windows phones things. And you know, like, the marketing campaign could also very easily be like, hey, you know, Apple is rolling out improvements to like the device enrollment program, you know, slowly and surely. But hey, we can make this all work now because we're, you know, used to deploying Windows CE devices and stuff like that for the last forever. So,
and I guess this is the thing. I see Sandra's put this in the comments that, you know, maybe Windows 10 everywhere. Maybe that becomes part of this. If that actually catches on, and
yeah, but here's the thing that LensCrafters that I was at, unfortunately for Microsoft, they had an iPad and not any type of Surface tablet or something like that. So,
well, that's a good point, because, you know, it's 2015. You can't say that any business who has a compelling case to assign their employees mobile devices or tablets, they've done that already.
I would 100% disagree with you on that one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You know, how many paper-based processes do we still see? But
I feel like I'm not saying that every company has done that, who could use it. I'm saying if a company felt the compelling case that assigning their employees a tablet made sense, I think they would have done that. And I don't think the reasons they have not assigned tablets so far is because of any reason that a Windows tablet or a Windows phone is magically going to fix.
Okay, got a point there.
Conversation for future weeks. We're out of time. I don't know if either of you guys have any sort of final thoughts, but we can pick this up, I don't know, next week.
No, yeah, this is a good conversation. It'd be good to have.
All right. Final thoughts, Jack?
I'm going to be at a few things coming up, popping over to Oracle Open World to see what they're doing in mobility, which turns out is quite a bit. And then a few weeks after that, I'm popping down to the Okta conference in Las Vegas. And I've been spending tons of time with Windows 10 management stuff, SCCM stuff, Azure Active Directory stuff. Stay tuned for some articles on all that later in November.
That'll be a good future topic, because I want to talk about Active Directory, you know, real Active Directory in Azure now. So maybe after you get back from Okta World or whatever they've got, and yeah, I think we should talk about that more in the Windows 10 management in general. That's good future stuff.
And I've got an event coming up on October 29th in Minneapolis. So it'll be a desktop virtualization roadshow. And, you know, if you're in the area, stop by.
That's next Thursday coming up.
Yeah, it is.
Your last show of the year. I did my last show of the year in Chicago this past week.
Oh, no, my friend. They're sending me to Boston in December.
Oh, well, better you than me.
And I'll be in Dallas in December, so there's that.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's always like Tampa in June and Boston in December. Like, switch this.
Yeah. It's because the people in those, they have to send you during bad weather for that area, because that's how you get people to come and sit in a room and listen to IT for half a day.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, thank you all for listening. Thanks, Jack, for joining. Thanks, Justin, for, you know, doing those things you do to make this stream happen. Our
project manager, Mariah Lyons.
I was going to say cat herder, Mariah.
Cat herder, yeah.
Gives us the line. So from Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian. Thanks a lot. We'll talk soon.